Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another edition of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. I've got a great guest coming on today. Look forward to talking to him. But before we get there, let's jump to my website really quickly, www.markpattisonnfl.com. A lot of stuff going on there. Of course, the Emmy Award-winning best picture that the NFL put on, Searching for the Summit. You can see it there. That's number one. Number two is I just got off this amazing climb down in the Tetons. I climbed the Grand. It took an all-out effort to make that happen, but that's so I can prep for next month over in Chamonix, France, in Zermatt, climbing the infamous Matterhorn. So there'll be more updates on that on the website. And then, of course, I've got over 275 podcasts of really inspirational people doing amazing things, like my guest that's going to come on today. And we look forward to having you guys come on, listen to some of these different people. And if you would, please give a ratings and review. And as always, I continue to raise money for Higher Ground through my campaign called Amelia's Everest. 100% of all funds go directly to Higher Ground. Higher Ground helps empower other people. My daughter, Amelia, has epilepsy. So we continue to fight for her and other people like that. So on that note, let's jump into today's great guest. His name is Don Munson. Don, how you doing?
I'm good, Mark. I appreciate you having me on.
So I'm not a professional doing this. You are not. I don't know about necessarily podcasting, but you've been in the broadcasting business for a long time. We've got a fantastic mutual friend, Eric Stelter. Eric, if you're listening, thank you very much for connecting us. But I heard that you were over at his place in Montana, and you guys probably saddle up and ride in the range. And I just got a little goosebumps in terms of wanting to try to get you on the podcast because, number one, you're a friend of Eric's, but as important, if not more important, your career path has taken you to the broadcast booth, broadcasting for the Clemson Tigers, baseball, football, basketball, and what a program to be associated with. So number one, I want to go back and, you know, really understand how you got into this field. You know, what was the impetus for you wanting to become a broadcaster, be involved in sports?
Well, it goes all the way back to college for me, and probably like a lot of our career paths does. It really started in college. My first year in school, I went to a small school over in Bristol, Tennessee, called King College. Was there my freshman year, then transferred to Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina. And so that my sophomore year there, as I transfer over, my roommate at that time was a very close friend that I had in high school, a guy named Mike Gore. And so Mike and I decided, all right, we're going to room together. He was coming in. He also transferring in after a freshman year. So we pile up as roommates. And early on in our first semester there, he says, hey, I'm going to go to this student radio station meeting that they're having. You know, their student radio station on campus, and it was all student run with some faculty input and that kind of stuff. So he said, man, I think you ought to come to this. I think that you would really enjoy it, that you would really like it. I had been involved in kind of like drama and that kind of things throughout grade school and even high school. So was used to being on stage and being in front of people. But that's where the love affair started, was my sophomore year. Man, I got into it, and, you know, I was in a business major at the time. It didn't take me long to switch over to communications, and off I went, and off I started, kind of learning as a baby chick pushed out of the nest. You know, you're first you're a fledgling, and then, you know, you go through your puberty stage and become an adult in it. And now I've been doing it since really on a professional basis since 1984.
So, of course, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, right? And I think, you know, in any things that I found, at least, and, you know, whether it's been in the NFL or mountain climbing or being involved in Sports Illustrated, you know, it's really trying to think big. And, you know, so I was listening to that story, and you start with a small little tiny school your freshman year, and then you move up to Appalachian State. And still, that's still, as you know, because you're in it now, it's still not part of the Power Five, right? And so tell me about the way that, you know, a kid who wants to jump into the communication field and potentially broadcast and be involved in sports, but how did you visualize, you know, were there any mentors out there that gave you the tools to really think big? And I think that's part of, you know, anything when you do something grand, is that you gotta look out there, you gotta have the vision, you gotta see where you're going to really understand the path that it takes and the hard work and the grind that's gonna require for you to get to that spot.
Yeah, for me, it started in my household. To be perfectly honest, I had great parents, had great mother and father. I mean, just tremendous mom and dad. They're both now gone. My dad passed away in 12. Mother just passed away just last year in August of last year. But, you know, they always, you know, told me that they believed in me. They always told me they were proud of me. They always loved up on me, no matter what kind of trouble I got into, no matter what I did. Now, they were disciplinarians. Don't get me wrong, but they did it in a way to make sure that they loved up on me. You know, sometimes we as parents, you know, the thing that drives me craziest about today's parent is that they want to be their child's best friend. That's not what you're there for. You're there to be their parent. And sometimes loving up on a kid means that you have to discipline them. It means you have to discipline them hard. I didn't come up in a household where guys were beating me with a belt or anything like that, but I had discipline in my life. But more importantly, I had parents that loved me. They did it through a Christ-centered love for me. My dad was a Presbyterian pastor. Mother was a pastor's wife. And so, but that's where it started for me. Then when I got into high school, I had an English teacher, a guy named Tom Orr. Tom has now passed away. But as I was going through and doing all the drama stuff and was getting fairly good at that, performing on stage, he was a guy in particular, my junior and senior year in high school, that really helped and lead me and kind of, you know, develop at least my speaking aspect and how to control my voice and all of that kind of thing. And that's certainly important in the broadcast business. Yeah. And then once I got into the broadcast business itself, it was really kind of a plethora of people that were just across it, always kind of had an influence. There was when I was at App, I was the play-by-play voice at App from 84 to 91. There was a gentleman that was the commissioner of the Southern Conference. Appalachian State was in the Southern Conference at that time. But the guy that was the commissioner was Dave Hart Sr. You may know Dave Hart Jr. Dave Hart Jr. was former athletic director at Florida State. He was at Bennett, Tennessee. But Dave, he was an AD at Missouri, probably when you were playing ball at Washington. Dave Hart Sr. was the AD at Missouri, and then he kind of moved up the ranks. But Dave always showed a lot of confidence in me, even as a student at Appalachian, and then afterwards, even as I was taking over. So those are kind of some foundational guys. But there obviously have been guys in the business. I mean, Gary Hahn at NC State is a really close brother of mine, just a tremendous man there. Johnny Holiday at Maryland. Johnny is a guy that I think is the only guy I know as a broadcaster that's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was Casey Kasem before Casey Kasem was Casey Kasem. That's who Johnny was. So he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and has been at Maryland now, and he's in his early 80s and still broadcasting away there. But then just a bunch of other guys inside the league as I got inside the ACC that have also helped me out. A guy named Steve Martin in Charlotte that I first kind of worked with. There was a Mike Hogwood as well, who worked inside of the league before he passed away. So I've had a lot of good people around me from a broadcast standpoint that have kind of helped build. And then, of course, the man here, the voice of the Clemson Tigers, it will always be the voice of the Clemson Tigers, a gentleman by the name of Jim Phillips. You know, for when I first joined Clemson in 94, Jim lived till 2003. So that period of time, he was a really great mentor to me and helped me prepare for this position that I'm in now.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you know, again, let's go back to the first thing you talked about, which was I asked about, you know, your mentors, and the response that you had was your parents, right? Yeah. And if just there was more parents that stuck together, more parents with the power of positivity that really, you know, pushing their kids in the right way with the right kind of discipline. I don't know any person that I've ever been around that didn't at the end of the day really appreciate that discipline, because they set the ground rules and then you went out there and then you achieved whatever you're trying to achieve. You know, it might just be 10, you know, 100 yard sprints, you know, and under a certain time and it's hot, it's sticky, you know, on the football field and the coach is pushing you. I played under Don James, very hardcore disciplinarian, you know, type of thing. And I too grew up with two amazing parents. So I was very fortunate in that way that just, you know, they never said you can't do this. The word can't never, ever, ever came up in their vocabulary. And so then there's other people too, but But the bottom line is, I think that we all need. And the second thing you're talking about, I think, is just the power of networking. And I think that's one of the things that people are short-sighted about, because the amount of people, you know, you talked about Missouri. One of my coaches, he was actually my wide receiver coach. I was a wide receiver in high school. I'm sorry, in college. Well, and the NFL in high school all the way through. But it was Gary Pinkel. Gary Pinkel later went on to Missouri, you know, just tremendous success at University of Missouri. Now he's retired, but, you know, all these people seem to shift to move around. My best friend is Jim Moore. He just got hired by UConn. Right. And so it's just all the world of maneuvering, and this guy goes over there and this guy, but he remembers, and it's because you're good to those people and they recognize your talent. And that sometimes can propel you to where ultimately you want to go. In your case, you know, you go from little Appalachian State, you're broadcasting there from what, 84 to 91, something like that. And, you know, you're cutting your teeth, you're cutting your chops, you're learning how to do this. Meanwhile, you're meeting other people. Those schools are going to other schools around the conference and playing each other, and you're getting to know those other people, your counterparts of what you do. And again, it just spreads out like a web, and ultimately you land at Clemson. And I mean, I've never been there. And I've only heard about Death Valley. It's just an amazing spot. You've won a couple of national championships. Now you've got an amazing coach, amazing program. What has that been like for you?
It's been a blessing first and foremost for me, you know. So the way that I ended up at Clemson, I'm subbing on a Furman University broadcast in 1993. Furman is just up the road from us in Greenville, South Carolina. But a buddy of mine was the play-by-play voice. He had to be in Texas for something, and he called me. He said, "Hey, could you come in and do a football game?" And it was a solo day. I mean, there was no commentator, there was no color guy or anything, no sideline reporter. So I said, "Yeah, I'll be glad to come in." So then, like, I do that on a Saturday, and then the next Monday or Tuesday, the people at Clemson, the guy that was running the network for Clemson, they ran Furman's network, but they heard me, and they asked me, you know, "Hey, would you come and meet with us? And, you know, we'd like to talk to you about possibility of being part of the Clemson broadcast in the 94 season." So came down and met with them. And, you know, that's where it started for me at Clemson. And it was, again, networking. Never burn a bridge. Never burn a bridge. I'm just telling you, you know, young students come to me here at Clemson all the time. And, you know, how do you do this? How do you get into it? The most important aspect is going to be people that you know. Your resume, I think when you get out of college, you think it's about your resume. Mark, you and I know better than ever, it's not about your resume. It's about who you know, what you do, how you go about doing your work. That is the biggest thing that is your selling point that will make people believe in you. And I firmly believe that. You know, I'm now 60. So my best days, dude, my best days are still ahead of me. I'm excited to see, you know, what's in store for me, even as I, you know, even as I hopefully have another 20 years of doing this. Yeah. And if I do, then you know what? I've still got bigger and better things that are ahead of me. And I'm really looking forward to that. Really am clawing to see, you know, what God is going to do in my life, how he's going to go about operating it. But I know he's got something special for me. And it may be still just staying here at Clemson. But something tells me, I think there's something bigger than that.
Yeah, I believe, you know, first of all, we're the same age, and that's number one. Number two is I have the same philosophy. I think that, you know, the game is just starting to begin. There was a movie that I saw not too long ago on Netflix, and it was called, I can't remember what it was called, Riot or something, but it was about the life of Jake Burton. Jake Burton was this founder of really the snowboard industry, you know, way back when there was no snowboard. There was a plank of wood in the shed, and he got a pair of old tennis shoes and nailed them, you know, to this plank of wood, and then, you know, jumped in the shoes and then went down this hill. And that was like the first snowboard that was invented. And so it goes on and shows his trajectory of life and how the whole snowboard industry really blew up, and very super successful, you know, very wealthy guy. And he gets around 60, and some of these people are saying, and he went through this bout of cancer, and some of these people came up to him and said, you know, "Hey, Jake, why don't you slow down?" And he turned around and said to him, "And maybe it's time for you to speed up, you know, because I'm not slowing down," right? Same type of philosophy, like still a whole lot of life. Now, at the end of the day, he passed away from cancer in the second bout. But, you know, his whole mentality of like, you know, there's still life. You don't have to get to some age. And in this case, you and I are both 60, that you have to slow down and pull back the throttle and just go out to pasture. You know, no way. Right. And I believe the same thing, which there's a whole bunch of just amazing things that are still out there, but you have to step into it. You just can't wait for these things to drop in your lap. You know, you have to be aggressive and you have to stay after it and you have to look for things to make that work. I want to talk to you about your relationship with Dabble Swinney. To me, he's a really interesting guy. I've been around all sorts of coaches, right? And he really seems to lead from kind of a faith-based point of positivity. You see coaches, some negative coach down, some positive coach up, and he seems to definitely be in that second wave within the same confines of being very disciplined and having high standards for what he wants. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had the kind of success he's had. What has your experience been with him?
Well, obviously, Coach Swinney shows up here in 2003 as a wide receivers coach. Tommy Bowden, the then head coach at Clemson, hires him at that time coming into the 03 season. And, you know, he had been on staff at Alabama. Obviously, he played at Alabama under Gene Stallings, won a national championship there as a player, but was on staff. And then the staff that he was part of got let go. He thought that he was going to be part of the new staff that was coming in there. But the coach that was, he was kind of promised a job, as a matter of fact. And then the coach had a change of heart and let him go. So he went into the real estate business for a while, was very successful there, was completely out of football when Tommy called him to come here to Clemson. And thank goodness he did.
Yeah.
So he takes over midway through the 08 season when Coach Bowden resigns, and there's six games left that are in the season. Clemson's kind of floundering, but man, it doesn't take him long to change the way that they were doing business inside the football offices, running practices, playing games, the mindset that they came into games with. So he goes 4-2. He actually became the first head coach since 1970 to post a winning record when he took over midseason for a program. He was the first coach to do that since 1970. And so, you know, then he gets the full-time gig, and then it's off and running. Takes his first full season, he's off to an ACC championship, loses to a Georgia Tech team, a game in which neither team punts. It was just a scoring bonanza that happened. And actually, it's probably one of those games that if Clemson had 20 more seconds, they probably win that game because neither team could stop the other. But then, you know, to see what has happened since then, he called me in June of 2010 to ask me if I wanted to be part of his staff. And so I worked for him for 4 years. Now, I'm a broadcaster, you know, but he wanted a guy to come in and control the marketing and messaging of the football program and help him kind of like with his calendar, control his calendar. He affectionately called me his handler. I was, you know, that I had a title that was, I think, was director of creative media, I think is what my title was at the time, but it was also watching over all social media. Now, this is 2010, right? You know, Twitter had just come on board when he hired me. So Twitter was just starting. Facebook had been out there for a little bit. There was no Instagram or anything like that. But he had enough foresight to understand, right, what social media was going to mean not only to his program, but also to his players. I was to watch all the social media of the players and that type of thing. So that's where it started for me. And then I worked 4 years for him. A new athletic director came in. And then that's when he came, knocked on my door in the fall of 2013. You know, when the head man comes into you, I mean, you know, when the CEO of your corporation comes in and he closes the door to your office and you're sitting in your office and you're thinking, here he goes. And no, that's not good. And he looked at me, and this is Dan Radakovich, now the AD at Miami. But he looked at me and said, "Don, where do you see yourself in a year?" And I looked right back at him with that hesitation. I went, "Employed." And he went, "Yeah, very good answer." But that was at that time that they talked about moving me over to the play-by-play side. I'm now 50, you know, and I thought it was over for me from a broadcaster standpoint. You don't get these opportunities at a Power 5 school, you know, to do this thing. And Clemson was beginning its run to start to climb to the top of things. They just come off, obviously, the later that year, they would beat Ohio State in the Orange Bowl in a BCS win. And so that's where, you know, things really started. But getting to know Coach now and working with him as close as I do, he's as genuine. Everything that you see, I think if people think it's an act, it's not. It's the genuineness of William Christopher Sweeney that makes him who he is. But he may be the most competitive guy I've ever met. I mean, there's competition in everything. When they built the new football facility, it was all centered around comfort level and meeting space, but it was really built around competition. You walk into every phase of that building, there's competition that's going on. Mm-hmm. And so that's the biggest part. You know, and he has this slogan, best is a standard. That's the standard that he has for Clemson. Clemson's best, not somebody else's best. Clemson's best. You give me your best today, whatever that best is. If you think that you can, after the day is done, and you come to me and say, you know what, I gave you my best, I'll accept that. But he'll also hold you accountable if he thinks that you haven't given your best, that there's more in you and more to give. So that's the thing that makes him. But he's one of the most, you know, he's just most one of the genuine people that you will ever meet. And I think that's what helps sells Clemson, because it's not about anything else. It's about Clemson. I mean, I'm sure that Don James coached you the same way at Washington. It's not about the opponent. It's about us. It's about what we do on the field, how we go out and execute, how we take care of our business, not only here on the field, but in the classroom. When Clemson has had its best years is when Clemson football has had its best GPAs. That's just the facts. That's just the way that when they take care of business off of the field, then they usually take care of business on the field. So there's a lot of that that's all incorporated with what Coach Sweeney does.
Yeah, you know, I got to play for Al Davis, and his motto is commitment to excellence, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's the same type of thing. And again, it's really thinking big. It's not commitment to good or average. It's commitment to excellence, which is about as high as you go, right? And all that. And then the other thing that you're talking about is be your best. And John Wooden always talked about be at your best when your best is required, right? And one of the things I've found is just when you think, like this last weekend, right? I did this crazy climb. I climbed the Grand Teton.
I saw your video. I watched. I saw.
It was insane.
I did my scouting report on you, man. I knew what's going on.
Listen, it hurt. It was 60 miles, 8,000 vertical. I mean, when I did Everest last year, you know, that's a 3,000 on summit day from 26,000 500 feet. That's a 3,000 foot push, right? Which is like, it took me 18 hours to do that. And it took me like 16 hours to get this done. I mean, it was hard. And hard things are hard, but the one thing that even though I was hurting and I was coming down, I was completely spent and exhausted, and it's really physical because all this climbing stuff, like Spider-Man going up the side of these big rocks. But even when I thought I was out, you know, there was more. There was still more in the tank. And so when you start talking about your best, or your, you know, the commitment to excellence and things like that, you know, it's just getting those people to believe that even though you think that there's a level, there's another level beyond that level. And it seems like Dabo has been able to really tap into that. And the other thing that you're talking about is, you know, his credibility within the building. And there's no question that at the end of the day, even though he might be a phenomenal coach, like just like I think Jim Moore is, you still got to get the players. The players are the players that, and you got to put them in a position to win. And there's no question that he's been able to go out there and recruit some really top notch talent. Also, they have to be bright, and they have to be smart, and they have to understand the plays. And that you're talking about being reflective with the GPAs to the success on the field. There's no question that there's parallels and all this stuff, but you got to get the players. You don't get the players, you have a couple bad recruiting classes, you get a little bit lazy. And it's hard not to be, because you have to constantly be on the road and grinding to bring in those top-notch talent to be out there. That takes a lot of self-discipline. There's no question that Dabo has that kind of motivation to bring in those types of players.
No doubt about it. At all. I mean, right behind me, you know, back that wall is really featuring two national championships. That's right there behind me. The way that he recruited for those classes was completely different than the way that he recruited when he first took over on a full-time basis going into that 09 season. Yeah. In 09, he's selling a dream. I mean, when he got Taj Boyd to come here and play at quarterback, he was, Taj, you and I together, we can do this. We can begin the building blocks of something in this program here at Clemson. But, you know, when he's recruiting these guys and the guys that he has on the team right now, now it's totally different. I mean, he's recruiting the best of the best because the best of the best want to come and play now at Clemson. They want to come and play where they can have success, where they can go to a playoff, win championships. I mean, you know, as a player, that's what sells it. That's what sells it to you. Mom and dad's, you know, a little bit different, but for the players, you know, are going to make their own decisions about where they go. So that's the way that it gets sold here at Clemson. And it has to be a certain type of guy that fits in here at Clemson. Sweeney is great. Sweeney can size up a recruit in about 10 minutes, whether or not this is going to be a fit here at Clemson, whether this guy is going to fit in, as he likes to say, little old Clemson. But little old Clemson, you know, grows to well over 100,000 people on a home football weekend, and it's fanatical. I mean, it's a frenzy that's happening in Memorial Stadium in Death Valley on those seven Saturdays where they get to play. But, you know, it's amazing to sit back and watch the way that he has built this program. I never will forget my first year, 2010, on the staff. We lose to South Florida in the Meineke Car Care Bowl in Charlotte, North Carolina. All right, so to finish at 6-7 on the season. And he walks right into that press conference afterwards, and he just looks at the media members and he says, guys, this isn't in the way that we wanted to. This season didn't go the way we wanted to it. But I'm telling you right now, I've seen enough in this season to understand that Clemson is about to embark on its greatest decade ever in football. I ask that question all the time. Raise your hand if you believe William Christopher Sweeney when he made that statement in 2010. When I'm speaking to alumni group, you know, hardly anybody. But he had the belief in himself and he had the vision in himself to see. And it's what he has built here at Clemson now is a perennial power, and they will be a threat. They're ranked number 4 in the preseason polls, so they're going to be a threat to be right back in the playoffs again, and then hopefully an opportunity to make it to LA and play for a national championship.
Yeah, so let's step out of Clemson for a minute, and I want to talk to you about this whole shift in college football right now and your opinion on where you think this is going. You know, USC and UCLA just left for the Big Ten.
Right.
They were in the Pac-12 for forever, right? Washington, my home school, has been there forever as well. They're probably part of the original founders of that conference. Used to be the Pac-8. They went to Pac-10 when I used to play, and now it's Pac-12. And so, you know, the question is, you know, what happens to, I don't know if Washington and Oregon are the two next dominoes, or we start adding other teams into our conference. I'm not sure how this is all going to play out, but it just seems like at the end of the day, like, could there be a scenario where there's just no conferences? There's just everybody's basically an independent and lining up games to play.
I have been under I've been preaching this for about the last 10 years. I really believe that we're splitting off and we're going to see a group of schools, whatever you call it, a group of five, whatever you're going to call it, but somewhere between 64 to 80 schools, they're going to split off from the NCAA. They're going to form their own governance body. Yes, there will be conferences. Yes, there will be divisions across the United States. But those schools then in football will probably have an 8-team playoff to begin with, and then it grows from there to 12 and then probably to 16, something along those lines. But then they'll have their own individual national championships. Everybody will be eligible for basketball. Everybody will be eligible for baseball. Whatever the Olympic sport is, everybody's going to be eligible for soccer's, all that kind of stuff, and they'll play it all. The reason that I say that is because when you just, you know, look at who the media rights owners are, the ESPNs of the world, the Foxes, the NBC now, obviously the new deal that was just cut with the Big Ten, they're talking $7-8 billion, and it's really across three different networks that are all combining together. Why? Because those networks understand Washington, Michigan, Clemson, Texas, those draw eyes. You know, the magic number for television execs right now, if you don't know, is 4 million. If you can get to the point where there's 4 million eyes on your product in college football right now, then that's out of the norm, right? Mm-hmm. That's really, it's above 3 million, but 4 million, man, you get to 4 million, that's not a norm. You know, most of these, you know, say Washington and UCLA are playing on the West Coast, you know, they may get 2 million eyes. They may get 1.8 million, maybe 1.5 million. It could crest, you know, depending upon how those teams are ranked, then maybe 2.8. But they don't get the East Coast viewership because probably they're playing at night. And so they lose a lot of things that are east of the Mississippi. So how do you get all this stuff? How do you get the big numbers together? And the way you get the big numbers together is by putting the best of the best on the field together. And so that's where it's headed. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that's where it's headed.
Yeah. And the NCAA has really lost all the credibility in terms of the leverage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who needs them?
Right? I mean, look at just what happened last week, Mark. I mean, the NIL and the NCAA is reaching out to their schools and say, hey, we need your help. Will you turn people in? That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not going to happen. I mean, so they've lost touch. They've lost credibility, like you said. And it's a difficult thing, but we're in a changing world. From that standpoint in the sports world, NIL has certainly played into it. Name, image, likeness has certainly played into it. And even that's going to change. I don't think that, you know, really the first year that we've had NIL last year, when you go back and you look at the last 12 months, I don't think that it went near like any of us thought it was going to. I mean, we had kids that were signing $1 million deals at schools, and then I got my money and I'm out. I'm transferring. Obviously, it just happened at LSU. Miles Brennan just leaves the program, but he walks away with a couple of $1 million in his pocket because that NIL stuff is not tied to his performance on a football field. So yeah. I think that, you know, people have got to learn, sponsors in particularly have got to learn who they sign and how they go about it.
I think I was about 40 years too late in my career. But anyways, all right. So who do you guys kick off with here in a couple of weeks?
Well, we have Georgia Tech on Labor Day night. That will be in the Mercedes Dome in Atlanta, be on national television. So it'll be an 8 o'clock game. So you'll be able to see us there. And then, you know, we kind of open up with Georgia Tech, come home, play Furman the next Saturday. So a short week to get ready for Furman. And then the week after that, it's Louisiana Tech. Then we start getting into it. ACC season will open for us on the road at Wake Forest. NC State will come here the week after that. So kind of back to back, what I think will be ranked teams for Clemson right there. So we'll kind of know a lot about this football team. Once we get into really the second week of October, we should know a bunch about Clemson.
Love it. Love it. Hey, where can people find you?
Well, people can find me. If you want to find me on Twitter, it's W Donald Munson there. Instagram is just at Don Munson. There. Facebook, I don't take many Facebook requests anymore because Facebook has gotten to the point where is it really you that's asking me to be a friend, or is it somebody that's copied you and, you know, my thing is going to get hacked. But you can find me there. So that's kind of where, obviously, our website here at Clemson Athletics is ClemsonTigers.com, and you'll find me doing some things that are there. So that's where I can be found from that standpoint.
Love it. Love it. There he is, the King Tiger. All right. There is the one, the only, Don Munson. Don, thank you so much for coming on.
Mark, certainly do appreciate it. Just let me, I'll leave your folks with this. Let me tell you, believe in yourself because you can do anything you want. I mean, you can. There's nothing is impossible. Never say it can't be done because it can be done. Mark will tell you that. I'm going to tell you that. And then also find something to hold your anchor into. For me, it's a belief in Jesus Christ. It's a belief in what God has done for me through his son. His Holy Spirit lives in me. But you know what? That's what I believe. You know, my job is to just profess that belief. The Holy Spirit himself will come and move upon you and work in your life. And hopefully you can come to that belief as well. But believe in yourself. Believe that there is a God that's out there. The biggest lie in the world is the devil saying that I don't exist. He does exist. This is an evil world in which we live in. Go find the goodness in it. Do good to others. Serve others. Have that servant attitude, and you'll do well in life.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Take care. We'll get this out to you as soon as possible.
Thank you, brother.
Okay.